Hello, everybody, and welcome to We Are Marvel, where we explore all the corners of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and we are also the official podcast of the We Are Marvel Facebook group. Go ahead and check them out today. It's a lot of fun. And we are your hosts. My name is Justin.
My name is Jeremy.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, everyone. We appreciate it.
Yeah. This week, especially, because we're talking about... I've been thinking about this, like, nonstop for about a week now. Is this the best movie in the MCU?
It's pretty damn close. If it's really far up there if it's not, because I was really excited to watch this again. It's been a little while. And I couldn't wait. And even watching it, I was like, God, this is so good. Like, this is so cool. Everything's so good. Yeah. Love it.
What gets me is, like, even outside of just comic book movies, I think it's just the best film. Mm. Like, it's the one where if you took out all the comic book stuff, which there isn't much of, and just put it out there, it would still be a solid spy versus spy film.
Yeah, definitely. You would have to explain a little more of the backstory.
Sure.
If it was just, you know, normal movie, like, I'd be like, okay, I don't know who these people are.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a sequel, so obviously there's a little bit of, you know, but...
Yeah, but it is. It's a solid just movie, not just comic book movie. It's a solid movie. Yeah. I loved watching it, man. It was so good.
Yeah. I'm happy to be here.
Yes. Like,
and for those that haven't read the title and don't know what the hell we're talking about, we are going to be talking about Captain America, The Winter Soldier from 2014.
Yes.
Woot woot. This is when Marvel, I think... changed gears.
Okay.
Like, from this point on, it was just solid uptick. And I like Age of Ultron, so shut up. It was just good after good after good. And then we hit phase three, and it was just slam dunk.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah. This was definitely the beginning of just zooming off into the sky, no limits. Like,
yeah.
Just so good. And actually,
so without much further ado,
sorry, I want to bring up one thing, because our last movie episode was Thor the Dark World.
And it was.
And I didn't read the article, unfortunately, but I did see that the director, which, God, I can't remember his name now.
Alan Taylor.
Yeah. He wants to do his own kind of Snyder cut, if you will, his own extended version. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like there was, you know, more to it, and it was... maybe rushed or edited incorrectly. So, I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing it, because like we mentioned, it's not as bad. And the reasons it is bad is because we feel like it was rushed. Mm-hmm. And so to see the full length, his full idea, I'd love to see that.
Yeah. I don't think Marvel will ever do that.
Oh, no. No, not at all.
There's too much canon for them to do a director's cut. Whereas with DC, it's like, what's a canon?
Unfortunately, that's true.
Those things on the pirate ship? We don't have any of those.
I don't have no Jack Sparrow.
That's Disney, you silly gooses.
Yeah, so that'd be cool to see. And maybe that would have been our jumping off point, our kind of launch, if you will, instead of this.
I mean, it could have been.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, I would love to see extended versions of all of these.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it would just be a fun, cool thing. Like, if the MCU ever officially ends.
Yeah.
And then they start over or take a breather for a couple years. For them to go back and re-release stuff, like, anniversary style with extended shit would be so great.
That'd be amazing. Yeah. Sign me up, man.
Mm-hmm. Maybe if we're still around in 20 years, it'll happen.
Yeah. If we're not, we'll team back up to make that episode. That's for sure.
All right, let's dive into this because there's a lot to cover. As Steve Rogers struggles to embrace his role in the modern world, he teams up with a fellow Avenger and S.H.I.E.L.D. agent Black Widow to battle a new threat from history, an assassin known as the Winter Soldier.
Wow. Dun, dun, dun.
One thing I will say just off the top, I'm glad that they went away with the doofy man at a time thing that they kind of did in Avengers.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, it worked for Avengers. It was funny. I understood that reference is great. But, like, they kept he doesn't know everything that's happening now because he can't. But, like, when Black Widow, you know, they see Zola and she starts to quote that movie that I can't think of the name of.
War Games.
And he's like, yeah, I know, I've seen it.
Yeah.
Like,
kind of like.
It was.
I've heard this, yeah. Like, yeah. We don't need to bring it up again. I get it. You think I've never seen anything, but I have.
Yeah.
I kind of saw
it. I've watched. Yeah. It was nice to be like, he's not on the back foot the whole time because it helps him be the captain.
Yes.
Like, if he's always like, what's this thing do? Oh, what's that thing? Oh, that's dumb. What the hell? When we did it, it was all steam powered. Yeah. Like,
how can you talk on that phone? There's no cord.
Where's the rotor go? Like, it was nice that they did away with it. Like, they kept it in the parts where it worked and was fun or interesting or whatever, but it wasn't a running joke. Like, right. I feel like it would have been for, like, an Iron Man movie.
Okay. Yeah. But that's a good point. Because, yeah, there were still a few things, even at the beginning with the whole, you know, he wrote stuff down on his list, and so he's got stuff to kind of, quote-unquote, catch up on. But, right. Yeah, they did kind of... They didn't use that as a crutch or anything like that, so it was good.
Directed by Anthony and Joe Russo, the introduction of these fellas into the MCU proper. They would go on to do some pretty good things, you know, in the MCU. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Possibly coming back one day. We'll see. Hope so. Screenplay by Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely, who did all three Captain Americas and the last two Avengers movies.
And helped out with some reshoots of Thor the Dark World, as we mentioned on that episode.
Indeed. Starring Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson, Sebastian Stan, Anthony Mackie, Kobe Smulders, Frank Grillo, Emily Van Camp, I thought the list ended, Haley Atwell, Robert Redford, who's amazing, and Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
Big, great cast.
That is a great
cast. I have a question.
Yes.
I'm trying to think how to phrase it. Did you know that Bucky was the Winter Soldier before watching the movie?
No, I didn't. I don't think I did. First time watching it? No. So, you know, obviously this go around, yes, but.
Well, yeah.
I was trying to remember that too. I was trying to remember, like, was this like a big shocker to me when it was kind of revealed? Mm-hmm. And I was even watching it, like, thinking, like, could he tell with just the eyes? It's like, no, I don't think you could tell enough. Especially if you're even crossing your mind.
And he had the goggles and the long hair.
Yeah, and it wouldn't even be crossing your mind, like, could I know this person? Could this possibly be Bucky? Because I didn't see his body. Like, it wouldn't cross your mind whatsoever.
He fell off that train, but he could have survived the last 70 years.
Yeah, but what if he survived and is in this great a shape? So, no, I don't think I did. And yeah, it was a really cool reveal. Like, wait, what? Yeah.
Because this is a storyline strip straight from the books that Ed Brubaker did. It's the run I read and love. Brubaker, I don't know if I have it in my notes, but actually he has a cameo in the movie.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. When they do the reconditioning of Bucky.
Yeah.
And Redford's talking to him, the bald guy that's in there with him. I think he has glasses on.
Okay.
That's him.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool. I like when they release like that.
Yeah, I know. Well, then they've done it a lot. I mean, even in the first Thor, they had what's his face that wrote Thor comics. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But
do you have it in here that one of the directors is also in this movie?
No, but he's in all of their movies.
Is he in all of them? He's in this one.
Yeah.
As
he's in
the Doctor?
Let's see. In this one, he's.
I think he's a doctor in their kind of bunker right before we see Fury.
Yeah. He's the doctor working on Fury in this. Mm-hmm. In Civil War, he's the doctor that Zemo kills.
Okay.
That was supposed to talk to Bucky. He's the one that ends up in the bathtub.
Oh, is he really? Dead. Okay.
Yeah. And then maybe he's not in Infinity War.
I think he is Infinity War.
I know.
Isn't he in... Or no, that would be Endgame, I think.
Yeah, in Endgame, he's at the counseling session. Yes. The one that said that he went on the date with the guy and it went well and shit. Yeah. That's him. And there's also Jim Starlin, who created Thanos, is in that scene too.
Awesome.
But yeah, I'm trying to think if he's in Infinity War.
Maybe he's not.
Because they also do, and I didn't put it in here, they do cameos from Community cast members in all their movies except Infinity War.
Yep.
Because they worked on Community.
Yeah.
So in this one, Danny Pudi's in it.
Uh-huh.
In Civil War, it's, is it Jim Rash is his name?
The principal?
Principal, yeah.
Okay.
And then in Endgame, Yvette Nicole Brown is in the elevator, what's-his-face is in the storage container place where Scott is, where the van is. Ken?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember his last name, but Ken is...
Jung?
I think so.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to this movie.
Yeah,
released March 13th, 2014 at the El Capitan Theater and April 4th, 2014 in the U.S. Budget of $170 to $177 million. Box office of $714.4 million.
Good. So
did pretty well.
I would take that any day. That's amazing.
Yeah. So let's get into the notes here so we can get rolling.
Right.
In April 2011, before Captain America the First Avenger was released in theaters, screenwriters Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely announced that Marvel had already hired the duo to work on the film's sequel. Good choice. In September 2011, Chris Evans said that a sequel may not be released until 2014, which is true. By March 2012, Marvel whittled down the possible directors for the sequel to three candidates. George Nolfi, who I don't know, F. Gary Gray, and the brothers Anthony and Joseph Russo. In April, F. Gary Gray withdrew his name from consideration, choosing instead to direct the NWA biographical film Straight Outta Compton.
That was good.
Which is a good movie.
Yeah, it is.
That movie.
Yeah.
McFeely said the writing began in the middle of 2011, around the release of The First Avenger, with him and Marcus, quote, noodling on in hopes that there would be a second one, and we did a lot of just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what stuck. The first few months of writing were a back-and-forth process with Marvel, but after an outline was finished, the story did not change much. They opted to set the story in the present day, and after experimenting with flashback elements for more period World War II stuff, decided to abandon the flashbacks as it, quote, became unwieldy. That is one thing I was kind of hoping they would do.
Yeah.
Because when you read the Brubaker books, there's a lot of flashbacks to World War II.
Okay.
And I was kind of hoping they would find a way to do that. But I think as cool as it would have been, it wasn't necessary. And the times that they did kind of reference it worked fine.
Yeah.
The tone would be more grounded in reality, despite the advanced technology, to contrast the fantasy elements from both the first Captain America and the Avengers. Marks and McFeely wanted to adapt Ed Brubaker's Winter Soldier storyline from the comics, which they described as, quote, the tone of Cap's modern franchise. Good call. but it took the duo 6 months to convince themselves that they could do it. In the meantime, while thinking how to progress from the war film tone of the first Avenger, the writer settled on the conspiracy genre for the screenplay and cited 3 Days of the Condor, The Parallax View, and Marathon Man as influences, feeling it better conveyed Captain America's trust issues and contrasting values in the new world he was living in.
Okay.
Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige described the film as a political thriller, and as the duo struggled to figure out a third act, Feige suggested that S.H.I.E.L.D. be brought down and have Captain America fight the agency. The writers thought this was a great story point for implementing the physical manifestation of Cap changing the world.
I mean, yeah, but I also feel like, of course you're going to say your boss's idea is a great idea. Like, you're like, good idea, Kevin, but no.
Stupid idea, boss.
Yeah. Leave the writing to us. All right, buddy. I know.
I remember when, I don't remember if it was, it had to have been a special feature for Winter Soldier, otherwise they wouldn't have said it, but yeah. I remember Feige saying like he had the idea while they were working on Winter Soldier, or while they were working on the first Avengers movie, of like, hey, let's take down S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, yeah.
And this isn't a thing from the books, from everything I know of comics, which, you know, do with that as you will. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember Hydra ever infiltrating S.H.I.E.L.D. and S.H.I.E.L.D. going away like this.
Okay.
But it was nice for me, I think. I think it helped get rid of that security blanket.
Yes.
And it helped set the stage for a civil war and for an Infinity War. Because if you have S.H.I.E.L.D. there with a buttload of army to back you up,
yeah,
like, you should be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of leaves you not having any struggles. And it's like, okay, well, you know, that threat's going to be done pretty quickly because we've got this gigantic army to just end it.
Yeah. And the only downside is when the helicarriers show up in Age of Ultron, it's like, okay.
Yeah. it's like those were pretty destroyed. Where's
like,
that come from?
And I mean, they're the old ones that don't have the repulsor tech like these ones do in this movie, but it's...
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the few things that, thinking back on Age of Ultron, I go, well, okay. They needed to get off Sokovia. I get it.
Yeah.
Feige said that Steve Rogers would be paired with other characters from the Avengers, like Black Widow and Nick Fury, because unlike Tony Stark and Thor, who could return to their own supporting casts, Rogers had nowhere else to go. And it just made sense that he was the only one that stayed with what remains of the Avengers at the end of the film. Which also makes sense. It's also nice for, I think, because it gives him that extra boost of, like, training.
Yeah.
When the first movie came out, the first Captain America, there was a video game. And it's amazing. If you ever have a chance to play it, get it. The way that he jumps and flips around and tosses the shield and it bounces around and comes back, it's straight out of the books and exactly like the opening of this movie on the boat.
Oh, nice.
Like, and that was one of the things I was missing from the first movie in Avengers. Like, give me that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So when they did it in this, it was like, and we'll talk about it when we get into the movie, but this movie ticks all of my Captain America boxes in a way that even the third one doesn't.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah.
Like I said, we'll get into it, but this is like my favorite Captain America movie. I lost my place. The writers considered including Hawkeye, but he didn't have enough to do, and suddenly it seemed like we were giving him short shrift? I don't know what that means. short end of the stick, I would imagine. Yeah. Leading all of his parts to be fulfilled by Black Widow. And Joe Russo added that Jeremy Renner's schedule could not be worked out for him to appear.
Okay. Wonder what he was doing.
Which is too bad. Probably a Mission Impossible would be my guess.
Yeah. When was The Town?
I don't know. You have a computer? Look it up.
Jeez.
My computer has my Winter Soldier notes on it, so I can't do any Googling right now. Fine. And my other one is looking at your dumb face. So.
Hilarious.
Yeah, I remember there was talk of, like, he was gonna, you know, like, come across Steve and Nat and be like, hey, your suits are bugged, so get rid of them. And that's why Cap ditches the stealth suit that he wears at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, okay.
But obviously that didn't happen.
Yeah. So in 2014, the World Wars, Louis the Killer Messenger, maybe he's working on American Hustle. It came out in 2013.
Maybe.
Hopefully not Hansel and Gretel, because...
Yeah, that movie sucked.
Yeah.
I didn't even see it, and I know it sucked.
And then, yeah, Mission Impossible is 2015, so he might have been working on that, too.
Yeah. Those do take a while.
Yeah. He's been in a lot of pretty good stuff. Looking at this list here.
And some not-so-good stuff, but...
Yeah, true.
Yeah. By June 2012, the Russos entered negotiations to direct the sequel, and Samuel Jackson was confirmed to return as Nick Fury. Feige sought out the Russos after watching the genre-parodying season 2 finale of Community, which Joe directed, and for the additional ideas they brought to the initial story pitch.
It was...
Well, there's a lot here.
What was the season finale of season 2?
Yeah.
Community?
I don't remember what the season... I haven't watched Community in a long time. I don't remember what it...
I'm IMDBing it right now. So season finale was, oh, it was. It was for a few more paintballs. So it was one of the paintball episodes.
Okay. That's how I figured it was one of the paintball episodes.
I love those episodes. I was hoping, I was like, it had to be, right? Because those are the best ones.
It have to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
God, I need to rewatch that show.
I know. It's so good.
At the 2012 San Diego Comic-Con, it was announced that the official title for the sequel was Captain America: The Winter Soldier, and I lost my mind because I knew what that meant and was like, yes! That's what you do. And that the Russo brothers would direct the film. After signing on to direct, the Russos met with Ed Brubaker to learn more about where the Winter Soldier character came from, his thinking, and the themes behind the character. So they just did everything right.
Yeah. I mean, it shows in the movie, like, clearly.
Yeah.
Like, there are not any, well, there's probably something, but there are very few flaws. None of them are big.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you remember our old friend Tony,
mm-hmm.
who used to come on our old show. I remember he and I having long discussions about these movies in general and just going, Winter Soldier is one of those, like, just perfect films where there's a lot going on and it's so interwoven and intricate, and it's like you want to find a plot hole that makes it not work, but it just does.
Right, yeah.
Like everything about it just tracks. And yeah. even if you look for that thing that's like, oh, that's kind of dumb, it's not though, because it just, it works and makes sense.
Yeah, it all works.
In July 2012, Anthony Mackie entered negotiations to star as Falcon alongside Evans in the sequel. Sebastian Stan was also confirmed to be reprising his role as James Barnes. Excuse me. By August 2012, Anna Kendrick, Felicity Jones, and Imogen Poots were being considered frontrunners for a leading role in the film. Obviously, none of that happened. I assume as Sharon.
Yeah, I was going to say, who would it be? But it has to be Sharon.
Yeah. The Greater Cleveland Film Commission announced Winter Soldier would film in Cleveland, Ohio, after the production was approved for a $9.5 million tax credit, so that works. Mm-hmm. Producer Nate Moore said that after also serving as a location in the Avengers, Cleveland's government was helpful in providing large locations for filming, which, quote, provided production value, which we probably could not have built in a back lot.
Yeah.
So there.
Probably.
Portions of the film were also scheduled to be shot in California and Washington, D.C. By October, Emilia Clarke, Jessica Brown, Findlay, Teresa Palmer, Imogen Poots, and Alison Brie were being considered for Rogers' love interest in the film, and Scarlett Johansson was brought back to reprise her role as Black Widow. Later in the month, Frank Grillo was testing for the role of the villain Crossbones, and by the end of the month, Grillo closed a deal to portray the character, and Kobe Smulders signed on to reprise her role as Maria Hill from The Avengers.
Yeah.
Jeez, I got a lot of stuff here. I didn't realize how many notes I had.
I mean, there's a lot to this movie.
Oh, I know. Also in January, Marvel announced that the film would be released in 3D, and Anthony Mackie said filming would begin on April 1st, 2013. Later that month, Toby Jones, who portrayed Arnim Zola in the first film, said that he would reprise the role in the sequel. And by the end of the month, stages were being built for a shoot at Relay Manhattan Beach Studios in Los Angeles.
Cool.
Wow, I got a lot of crap. Okay.
It's not crap, it's all great. It's gold, man. It's gold.
It's gold. It's gold, Jerry. It's gold. In February, Emily Van Camp entered negotiations to play a female lead in the film. By March 2013, Maximilio Hernandez was signed to reprise his role as Jasper Sitwell, and Robert Redford entered in talks to join the cast, which was awesome.
Yeah, I forgot that Agent Sitwell was ended that abruptly. Like, mm-hmm. he will not be back.
No,
I totally forgot. Kind of. I saw that, because especially after doing the one shots, and he's in two of them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's in at least two of them. Well, maybe just the one. I don't know.
Yeah, no, he's in The Consultant, and he's in Item 47.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah. So, and then to see him again, I was like, hey, you know, I just saw him in some one-shots. And then how he's just gone now. It's like, oh, that's the end. Yeah. It was, Yeah, poor guy. I mean, he was part of Hydra, so it's like, you know, he's a bad guy, but still.
Toward the end of March, UFC fighter George St. Pierre was cast as a character based on the comics Batroc the Leaper, and Powers Booth was asked to reprise his role from Avengers, but was unable to due to working on Nashville, which is too bad. But they did bring him back for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a couple times before he died.
Yeah.
So, Cap's uniform was altered from the one seen in previous films, with a Kevlar-based ballistic component that would protect Captain America, but at the same time function like a military uniform. Joe Russo said, quote, "We wanted to use his super soldier outfit from the Steve Rogers Super Soldier series," which, if you've seen it, pictures of it, it's like identical.
Nice.
"As a way to represent thematically his place in the world of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the difference between working for S.H.I.E.L.D. and being Captain America."
Hmm.
I like that it was more stealthy.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, it definitely worked. I'm not crazy about the blue S.H.I.E.L.D., the baby blue S.H.I.E.L.D., but it worked. For the Falcon costume, the filmmakers were interested in adding more of a tactical design than was represented in the comics, because in the comics it looked kind of dumb, by including real-world webbing, straps, and gear, and stripping away the more comic book elements. And it worked.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it looked like it could be a real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Principal photography began April 1st, 2013, under the working title Freezer Burn, which is great.
I get
scenes taking place on the Lemurian Star were filmed on the Sea Launch Commander docked in Long Beach, California. In early May, Dominic Cooper confirmed that he would return as Howard Stark, and on May 14th, 2013, production moved to Washington, D.C., with filming taking place at the National Mall and the Theodore Roosevelt Bridge. The following day, Gary Shandling was spotted on set reprising his Iron Man 2 role of Senator Stern. Other filming locations in Washington, D.C. included the Willard Hotel and DuPont Circle.
Okay. Yeah. Did he come back at all, Howard Stark? Just his picture,
after
right?
this?
In this movie.
Oh, in this movie?
I think it was just his picture on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was just the picture.
Okay. You brought it up.
I know.
Maybe you'll also bring up later that it didn't work out.
He didn't actually. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I didn't take these notes that long ago. Filming in Cleveland began May 17th and was scheduled to last until mid-June, with locations scheduled on the West Shoreway, the Southerly Wastewater Treatment Plant in Cuyahoga Heights. Cuyahoga?
Yeah.
Anyway, the Lakeview Cemetery Dam. Cleveland was chosen as a stand-in for Washington, D.C. in the city's East 6th Street, doubling as 7th and D Streets in Southwest D.C. Other locations in Cleveland included the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland, Cleveland Public Library, Cleveland State University, the Cleveland Arcade, Tower City Center, the Cleveland Museum of Art, and the Western Reserve Historical Society. Interior shots were also filmed inside private homes and the Pilgrim Congregational Church in Tremont. Filming in Cleveland concluded June 27th, 2013.
Okay.
Almost done. Promise. Additional photography was filmed December 2013 and January 2014 in order for the Russos to accurately show the state of each character after the defeat of S.H.I.E.L.D., having read the script for Avengers Age of Ultron to guide their choices.
Okay, yeah.
Well, and that's something that, like, every time one of these Marvel movies films, and especially a couple years ago, they always go back for reshoots.
Right.
And every time people are like, oh, it's doing reshoots, uh-oh, because they're fucking up this time. No, it's because they have a better idea, or they watch it and they go, oh, this can make this better, or we know what we're doing next time, so this can connect to this and make that better.
Yeah.
Like, it's all good things.
Yeah. Yeah, most sometimes it is for hey, we messed this up, let's fix this.
Yeah,
But yeah, for these, it is mostly like, hey, actually, let's shoot this way, because then that'll kind of lead into the next movie or two movies from there.
It became the fifth highest grossing film of 2014 worldwide. Not too shabby. Captain America, The Winter Soldier made $10.2 million in Thursday night showings, more than double the midnight gross of its predecessor. It set an April single day with $36.9 million and April opening weekend record with $95 million. While its opening weekend was a 46% increase over its predecessor, the film held the number one spot at the box office for three consecutive weekends. Rotten Tomatoes reported a 90% approval rating with an average of 7.6 out of 10 based on 305 reviews. Damn.
Mm-hmm. I would have ranked it higher.
I do rank it higher.
Yeah, you're, yes. That's so probably the more correct way to say that. Nice.
All right. I realized I forgot to send you my notes.
You did. I'm over here just along for the ride, like I'm one of the listeners. I've been enjoying it.
Well, I'm glad. If you want to start talking about this movie for a few seconds while I do this, that would be nice.
Sure. I just start talking about the movie, or wait for your notes to get it,
and just go through. I mean, the beginning is awesome. With their race, you know, Steven and Sam's race.
That's not a race at all. A race would mean that two people have a chance. Okay.
Well,
this is Sam just happening to be working out and Steve also working out, but doing it at like twice the speed because he's a freaking super soldier. But yeah, it was a cool kind of way to introduce Sam into this and how he was just a guy that just happened to be working out at the same time, and they kind of talked a little bit after Sam was gassed on the grass there, leaning against a tree, and Steve says, what did he say? He ran like 36 miles or something. I don't know how accurate. He's probably making it up, but probably pretty close. And that's just kind of like how they met and just talked a little bit. And like, if this was kind of, you know, quote unquote real life, like, imagine that for Sam. Like, his whole life changed just because he was jogging around this place, happened to be getting passed and passed by Steve Rogers, you know, and kind of becoming friends with him. And now he is Captain America. Like,
yeah, that's insane.
All because he was jogging. What? So that's pretty cool.
And it's such a nice way of showing Steve's powers, too. Like, it's a nice, subtle, not dickhead way of being like, I'm awesome, and I'm just going to literally run laps around you.
Yeah.
And it's something they bring back in Infinity War, and when he and T'Challa just completely book it and race way ahead of the army, which is one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
It looks so cool. Like it's a small thing, but it just looks so cool. Like, yes, everyone is charging ahead at full speed, but these two are just so much more powerful, and look at them just take off and lead the way. Like, two just born leaders. It's one of those little
details that just makes it, and I'm sure we'll talk about it more when we do Infinity War in like a year.
A year? Longer than that, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty
close.
It'd
be pretty close.
I do like that they made Falcon ex-military and a counselor for soldiers.
Yeah.
That was a nice touch. We talked about the costume before. Like, they took all the things that could be construed as doofy for Falcon and kind of pushed him away, highlighted the good stuff, and made him great. And Falcon's one of those characters that I loved as a kid. Because I think we talked about this before with Vision. They had this cartoon in the 90s called Avengers United We Stand or something like that.
Okay.
And the main Avengers, like Cap, Iron Man, Thor, weren't in the show. That was led by Ant-Man and Wasp, and the team consisted of people like Hawkeye and Vision and Falcon and Wonder Man and some others, I think. And so the characters that I loved the most were Vision and Falcon. Like, I still have my 90s action figures of those two somewhere in one of my toy boxes.
Okay.
So it was really cool to see Falcon.
So what was he before? So he was an ex-military and not a counselor, or what was he before?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't remember what he was in the cartoon. And I was looking it up on Wikipedia, and I don't know if they've changed it since this, right, but it looked like it was pretty close. The nice thing that they changed was the doofy-ass costume. And they did away with Red Wing, which made me sad, but they found a cool way to bring him back.
Yes.
Which was awesome.
Yeah.
As soon as they said Red Wing in Civil War, I was like, fuck, yeah, they did it. Yeah. Clever bastards.
They are, right? And yeah, it makes perfect sense. Like, of course he would have a little drone that would kind of just be that, a little drone that could look ahead and stuff. And then, just to give it to clever name, Red Wing, like, tie it in. Yeah. Oh, it's like, you guys are brilliant. It's just so simple, but it's just so beautiful.
Oh, no. Favorite. It's tough to pick a favorite scene of the movie, but the one that always gets me hyped is the assault on the Lemurian Star in the beginning. And we talked about it earlier. He goes full on Captain America, and he's flinging the shield, and it's bouncing around like it shouldn't do.
Right.
You know, laws of physics aside.
Yeah.
Thank you, Spider-Man. But it's awesome, and it's what Cap Shield does. Like, it just goes ding, 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 and hits everything, and then comes right back to him for no apparent reason.
Well, it's because he planned it out before that.
Obviously. I mean, that's the actual reason, but...
Yeah.
And that's... Because, like, in the first movie, he does it kind of, like, he gets that sniper in the tree, and that kind of wonkily comes back to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, yeah, that was cool, and it was nice to see at the time, but that's really it. Like, he didn't have a lot of shield throwing in that first movie.
That's true.
And so seeing it in this scene, it was like, yes, this is everything I wanted from Cap, action-wise, because he's flipping around, he's tossing it, he's being clever. Like, when he just rails that guy with the knife as he's about to...
Ring the
fire alarm, and he just like shanks him in the hand with the knife. It's like, that's fucking awesome. And smashes him in the face.
Yeah, there were a ton of awesome scenes. Like, even just him jumping out of the plane without the parachute is awesome. Yeah. And just I was wondering, I was like, how far would he actually go down into the water? Like, he was like trying to swim up for like 4 minutes. Like, god damn, I went too deep.
I did not think this through.
Yeah,
especially with a vibranium shield, that thing just. Sunk them all the way to the bottom.
Right. That and yeah, just like the kicking people and just how hard some of them would just fly and stuff. Like, it was so cool. I will say there was one, just the smallest little detail that, again, this is being nitpicky, that I didn't like, is when he was running, and it was kind of a wide shot of the side of the ship, and he was running, and he kind of ran through what would be like a corridor or something, and just how quickly he came out of the other side. I know they're trying to show how fast he is, but it was just... almost just a few frames or something, just too quick. Like, okay, well, he obviously just teleported. Like, you can still show his speed, but not have him just teleport forward.
Appear.
Yeah. But again, but they were just kind of showing, like, of course, just how quick he is and how fast he is. But yeah, just the way he'd kick people and ding, like, bouncing off the side of the boat and stuff like that. Like, it was just so cool.
Well, and just how stealthy he was, too. Like, he took out everyone on that boat in, you know, a minute and a half.
Yeah. And just, yeah, never fired a shot.
Yeah.
The most he did was the knife, and I guess the shield. But, yeah, like, other than that, it was just him. It was awesome. Yeah. Such a cool scene.
And the fight with Batroc, which was awesome. For me, it was cool just to see that they did Batroc the Leaper. Like, I didn't know who George St. Pierre was.
Okay.
Everyone was like, oh, it's him. I went, okay. To me, it's, oh, hey, it's fucking Batroc the Leaper on a movie. Like, what?
Yeah. I'd say at the time, it was kind of towards the end of his career. But, yeah, he was huge in MMA. Oh,
I'm sure.
Yeah. So, that was cool to see. And he did a great job of acting. You know, he didn't speak English at all, I don't think, in this one, right? I think he does a little bit in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in this,
no. And he did good in the show, too.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think he did a great job. And yeah, most of his scenes were fighting, which he knows, but still, it was cool.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to bring up was getting to see S.H.I.E.L.D. as an actual spy agency was nice.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, in everything else, they're just sort of there. You know, in Iron Man, and even Iron Man 2, they're just like bureaucrats that are obnoxious.
Right, yeah. We don't really know what they're about.
Yeah, in Avengers, it's, I mean, they're there, but it just looks like, I don't know, just this weird agency with flying ships.
Yeah.
But in this, it's like, oh, they're a spy agency. Like, this is MI6 with even wackier gadgets and a flying, you know, aircraft carrier.
Right.
Three of them, in fact. That was what was fucking crazy. Like, I remember when, I don't know if I brought this up when we talked about Avengers, but like, I remember when the first Avengers movie happened and the helicarrier floated out of the water for the first time. And I was like, holy shit, they did it.
Yeah.
Like, they actually made a helicarrier and it's awesome.
Yeah.
And 2 years later, there's three of them just floating up there.
Yep. Just hanging out.
Shooting shit away.
Yeah. It was cool. It is cool. It still is. Like, yeah, I'd be so amazed to see one of those things flying around in real life.
Yeah. But we can't because they're all gone now.
Yeah.
Even the Age of Ultron ones are gone. So the main crux of this, the villain plot, is Project Insight.
Mm-hmm.
It's initially the idea that it would take out enemies of the United States, basically terrorist groups and shit.
Right.
And was being backdoor assimilated by Hydra to take out anyone who poses a threat to Hydra.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know if you have it in here. I'm going to try and skim over a little bit. I don't think so, but I'm kind of jumping forward a little bit, but kind of the way that Robert Redford kind of played the council to like make it their decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was just like it almost is like that evil genius type of thing. Like it's exactly what he wanted and they're just playing right into it because he pretty much like made them play into it. Just the way he had it all planned out and all that. It's just like brilliant. You're evil, but you're brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I mean, just Redford in general is so great. And one of those features for Winter Soldier, they were like, he was rewriting lines on set because he'd be like, I don't need to say this because I said this earlier, or, you know, this line needs to be changed to this. Like, he's so good at what he does that he was able to take this already incredible script, I'm sure, and make it even better
through
his character, at least.
And that's just from years and years of experience and making great films and being a freaking professional at your craft. That's cool.
Yeah. I love that they had Gary Sinise as the voiceover for the Smithsonian.
Okay, yeah.
That
I knew the
fantastic.
Voice. I knew the voice sounded familiar. I couldn't pinpoint who it was.
That's Lieutenant Dan.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, now thinking back, it's like, yeah, of course it is.
Yeah. And if you know anything about Gary Sinise, he's such a great guy. And after his work on Forrest Gump, he just had this incredible empathy and connection with the military. Like, I think he always did, but like after Forrest Gump and the notoriety, he started like doing what he does now. You know, all the volunteer work and the commercials he does for the Army and all that shit. Like, I was watching some documentary about it. Okay. Might have been movies that made us Forrest Gump. And they talked about all the shit that he does now. And it's just incredible the work he does for are fighting men and women.
Yeah, I've seen things like, he's just an amazing person. Like, he's so generous, and he does a lot for a lot of people. So, props to him. Way to go, Gary!
And he's always great, even in Of Mice and Men. Like, he's just awesome.
I don't know if I've seen that.
I saw it in school.
Okay.
He's the other guy. I don't remember the character's name, because there's Lenny, who's the dullard that, you know, kills the rabbits and the girl or whatever. But anyway.
back to this. How did we get there?
Gary Sinise.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Dan. Pretty heartbreaking when Peggy's still alive, but there's this twist that she has Alzheimer's. And I remember seeing that in theaters and going, oh man, they did that to Peggy.
I know. Yeah.
We're so happy to see her back, but then there's that switch at the end of the scene.
Yeah.
Just like, fuck you bastards. It works perfectly, though. And I put this in the notes. I know they didn't plan ahead like this, but I like to think that they did. the "you came back" line obviously is referring to, like, oh, this is like the first time she's seeing him back, even though he's probably visited her a million times.
Right.
But if you go to Endgame and he came back in time to be with her this whole time, in theory, and we never see, there's a picture of her family next to her in the bed, and we don't see the husband on purpose.
Right, yeah.
Like, it is very clearly blocked his face out.
Yeah. You can see some kids, but
yeah,
yeah, you don't see the husband. I noticed that too this go around. I was like, oh, wait, pictures. Oh, we still don't see him.
So I was saying, like, I really doubt they planned that far ahead, but
it
makes it nice on the rewatch to be like, oh, maybe they did.
Yeah, where it still leaves it kind of open, because this isn't the first time we've seen him look at pictures with her and mm-hmm. other people in it, and we haven't seen those pictures. So it still, like, it kind of leaves it up where it's maybe, just maybe, they could be true.
Well, it's like the pallbearer in Civil War.
Yeah.
That you see the back of his head. It's like, it looks so much like it. And by that time, they probably did have more of an idea of where they were going.
Oh, really? You think so? That's still pretty early.
Maybe. I know, but I mean, they were, when they announced Phase 3, they had Infinity War, you know, in the pipeline. Like, I have a feeling they had a general idea.
All right. Okay.
It's probably still a load of crap, but I'm I'm saying it's true.
Okay. I like it. It's a cooler story if it's true. Like, it doesn't harm anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not like, oh no, if that's true, then everything's just made up. Like, it can still be true. Why not? Just be happy, people.
Okay. Moving on. Let's go to the Assault on Fury. And introducing the Winter Soldier. Another one of those best scenes of the movie. Like, I could pick seven different scenes and say, like, this is the best scene of the movie. But that assault on his car and all the cops swarming around him and the bullets flying is freaking fantastic.
It's, yeah, it is so cool. Just the way that, like, I need that car. Like, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Just to have that, the bulletproof glass, the gun built in, the drives itself. It has propulsion, like, it can fly. They just weren't working at the time.
And that's the thing. That's because in the comics, there are flying cars.
Right.
It is a thing. And they do show up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it is something we've never seen in the MCU proper, is the fact that there actually are flying cars in the Marvel Universe. And I thought that was just such a click, because they're even in the Winter Soldier storyline in the books.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, it's such a nice little nugget nod for people like me to be like, oh, they have flying cars.
Yeah.
We're not going to see them.
No.
But they got them.
Yeah. If only that they didn't get damaged. Dang it. Everything but the AC got damaged, though, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. And then Fury dies, but not really.
Yeah. Are you going to skip that chase scene, or is it right after this? No, it's not. So yeah, we're
it's the same thing. Yeah,
right.
Because he gets shot and then he chases the big chase scene. But did you believe he was dead?
That one I don't remember, but I would think so. Probably not right like then. Probably in the hospital when they're working on him and they say he dies, I think I probably would have been like, oh shit. Like, he died. But
the only thing that makes me think that I didn't is because I'm pretty sure in the trailers they had the line of Fury saying, I guess you're leading the team now, Cap, or something like that, which is from later on.
Yeah,
and I was like, well, you said that, and that's not there.
Yeah, so. That's one of the bad things about trailers is there are some scenes where you're like, I know the movie's not done yet because I haven't seen this scene. Yeah. And then with Marvel nowadays, it's like, you can't always go off of that because they'll just cut shit out. Put stuff in, things,
entire characters and things that just aren't there.
Yeah. But yeah, I think I probably would have. Unless it was the same thing. I was thinking something where I was like, well, they haven't done this scene, so, you know, obviously he can't be dead. Yeah. But yeah, I don't remember for sure.
I'm glad they didn't. Obviously. Yes. And I think it's nice that they did it in the context of the spy movie trope of like, oh, we quote unquote killed off the guy they were trying to assassinate so that he could be undercover and then come back at the end.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like a Loki where it's like, oh, he's dead, but he's not. But then he's right. dead, but now he's not.
Yeah. Yeah. We're yeah. I you're exactly right. I 100% agree. Yeah. I'm just going to reiterate what you just said, and I'm not going to do it. Because, yeah, you're completely right. But yes, I do want to talk about that, though, where he chases down the Winter Soldier. Because he, mm-hmm. I think they say, like, you know, anyone see the shooter and you see him look up or whatever, and he's like, he just gets pissed off, like,
yeah.
I'm going to go get this motherfucker. And he just starts this chasing. This
isn't happening a second time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Erskine got shot on his watch, too.
That's right. Yeah, he just starts chasing him down, breaking through doors, like, just no fear, like, I will be breaking through this door. I don't care what's on the other side. I don't care if it's locked. I'm going through it. And yeah, it was just so cool. That was
awesome.
Yeah. And then to throw it and the Winter Soldier just turn around and catch. Oh, man. And then throw it back at him. It was just so cool. There are so many cool scenes in this movie.
That, I mean, it's one of those great trailer moments that I almost wish wasn't in the trailer.
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing it in the trailer and being like, oh, that's fucking awesome. Yeah. And, but still seeing it in the movie is like, oh, that's fucking awesome.
Yep. Yeah. Spot on. Like, yeah, I saw this. It's still cool the second time. Yeah. It's still cool this time. I don't know how many times this is, but it's still cool. I was ready for it. I was just like, here it goes. He's going to throw it. He's going to catch it. He's going to catch it, Cap. Don't throw it. Oh, man. So good.
Let's talk about leaving one of the other greatest moments of this movie to one of the other greatest moments of this movie, the elevator fight.
This might be my favorite. I don't know.
It's so tough.
It is tough. This one's really tough. Awesome, too.
Yeah. I love that they're just slowly piling into the elevator and the tension's building.
Yeah.
And Cap finally catches on and he's like, okay, so we're doing this now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of looks at everyone and is like, okay, this is a lot of people. Like, what is going on? Sees the guy sweating, sees other things, and it's just like, okay, this is happening.
And the line of, you know, before we get started, does anybody want to get off? Like, that's badass. And then he just dispatches all of them.
Yeah.
In one of the coolest fights ever.
Yeah. And he doesn't do it effortlessly. Like, he does have to work at it a little bit, which would make sense. There's, 15 people in this elevator versus him. But he still does. He, like, just finds a way to defeat them all. And they're all defeated. Like,
And not even, like, a little bit. Like, they're all just, like, on the ground unconscious. And you even see Rumlow or the other guy that doesn't talk with the slick back hair later on. You see him with, like, a big welt on his face from getting whomped.
Yep. Yeah, just looking mad. Awesome. You're right. He doesn't talk at all, does he?
I don't think so. Maybe, like, one or two lines.
Maybe. Or grunts or something. Yeah. And then just the kick up the shield all pissed off. Knock the cuff thing off, pissed off still. Just like, I said, anybody wants to get out?
And then he breaks the freaking barbs, you know, the cords holding the elevator. It falls down, can't get out, flies out the freaking glass of the wall down about, you know, 15 flights.
Oh, yeah, it's far. Lands on his shoulder. Awesome.
Well, and then, I mean, it goes from that, and then he's on his bike, which I always love to see, another nice comic book thing, is Cap on a motorcycle.
Right.
But him against the Quinjet, and he hops up there, and he throws the shield, and that ding-ding of the shield, and then he goes up and catches it. Like, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it was. He does it so perfectly. Like, and I did think that, too. I was like, because when he kind of catches the shield on one of the wings, I was like, ooh, like a 6 inches further, and you wouldn't be surviving this one. But of course, he does.
So he did it.
Yeah, exactly. And he does. He takes down a freaking Quinjet with just a shield. Mm-hmm. And oh man, so cool.
Because he's awesome.
Yeah. How does he get away after that?
The Quinjet goes down, and then he just kind of looks back at it, and then it cuts, and he's gone. Yeah. I assume he like got back on his bike and
maybe. I don't know, because it was on the other side of that kind of barrier. So maybe it's just Cap just chugging taxi.
That's still enough. Well, he saw how fast he can run.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he'd probably be faster than the taxi.
So, my favorite part of the movie.
Oh, okay.
The computer with Arnim Zola is fucking awesome.
Yeah, because this is out of the comics, right?
Kind of. I mean,
kind of.
It's in the comics, and they show it briefly in the first movie when Cap saves Bucky and there's a design on the desk. Mm. In the comics, he's a big robot with like a big TV thing on his chest, mm-hmm. and you see Zola's face.
Right.
So it's like they did the big TV face thing, mm-hmm. but in a way that made sense.
Yeah.
And there's actually a scene that they end up not doing where he rose up from the computer like as a big robot and walked off.
Oh, really?
Okay. It would have been cool to see, but I'm kind of glad they didn't do it.
Yeah.
But it's so perfect. Like, I love that scene because it takes these potentially dopey elements from the books and it makes them work, like Batroc or Falcon, mm-hmm. like things that would look kind of goofy. It fits in seamlessly with this covert spy thing.
Yeah.
And something I didn't see him doing.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of the things that I love about all these movies is how real world they make it. And, like, make it make sense. Like, it works. Everything just works when they mm-hmm. do this kind of stuff. I love it. It's awesome. Yeah.
So then we get Falcon suiting up, finally. Seeing the wings and the wingsuit. Looks mm-hmm. fantastic. Mm-hmm. The way they fold into that backpack thing doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's still cool.
Yeah. It's a very snug fit. Like, it's, yeah. Dust even getting in there kind of jams it up.
I would think so.
But, oh no, you skipped over one thing with the Armin Zola part.
Oh, I did.
Yeah. Which,
yeah, big. When it's, yeah, it is big, and it's one of those things that you almost don't even catch it because they don't point it out. But when Zola's doing the flip show of all the things that Hydra's been up to this whole time, one of the things that is insinuated mm-hmm. is that the Winter Soldier killed the Starks.
Yeah. I clearly I saw it because I was at the movie,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't put it together like later on that the Winter Soldier killed the Starks. And mm-hmm. like, that's Tony's parents. Like, I didn't put that together. And so when I saw that in the movie Civil War, like, it was like, for me, I think the first time watching it was like, oh shit. Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. It was him. Yeah. So that was.
Well, that's the thing. Like, even when Civil War started, I was like, oh, they're going to show Bucky killing the Starks. And then I kind of forgot about it because it's the first scene in the movie.
Yeah.
And then when they show the tape, like, I get chills even thinking about it now. I went, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Bucky killed Tony Stark. Like, this is going to be bad.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's almost it's two characters.
We'll
get
to it in a couple months, but it's...
Yeah.
It was so perfect.
It was.
Like, it was... Because the entire time of doing Civil War, because reading the books, like, I know what Civil War is in the books, and they're doing it differently here. Mm-hmm. I was like, how are they going to make this make sense that it has a lasting impact? Like, how do you not resolve the Sokovia Accords by the end of this movie and have the Avengers get back together? Because this is, it's a big deal, but it's also kind of dumb.
Right.
And not big enough to actually destroy the Avengers. And then they have this Winter Soldier bomb drop, and I went, oh, this is how they're doing it.
Yeah.
And this is the thing that fractures them.
Yeah. And then the date, right? Because it's the date that Zemo keeps asking is the date they died, right? Yeah. And you're like, at least for me, I was like, what is this date? Like, what is so significant about it? Mm-hmm. And then we find out, it's like, oh, this is how you're ending them. Mm-hmm. Not the super soldiers, not this, not that. It's this. It's just like, oh my God, freaking brilliant. But like you said, we'll get to that. Sorry. Yeah, like tangent.
Three months from now.
Coming back.
Yeah. So anyway, we get to the Falcon, Zola's algorithm and all that shit, and the Doctor Strange name drop, which made me so damn happy.
Yeah.
We were still 2 years away from Doctor Strange being a thing that we could see.
Yes.
But it was great to get the Doctor Strange name, because it was like, oh, they're doing it.
Yeah. It was cool.
These guys aren't going to drop that name and not make that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess they could have, like, we'd probably be disappointed, but... Like, it would just be another kind of nod to the fans if they never made the movie. But yeah, this was probably like they're probably doing something.
Yeah. Well, this was the tail end of Phase 2. We didn't even know what Phase 3 was going to be yet.
That's right, yeah.
And then Doctor Strange ended up being like the second movie of Phase 3.
Yeah. I do wonder if any of the other, because that's the only name he dropped, right? Or did he drop
Bruce Banner?
That's right. But then he kind of describes some other people, like a student at so-and-so high school and this and that. And
yeah.
I'm curious if like if these are actual characters and they weren't all going to be, of course, have a movie. But I am curious if they're actual people.
I'm sure there's a site from 2014 that broke down who all of the names could have been.
Yeah, it's probably true.
So my favorite part of the movie.
Another one.
The Cap versus Winter Soldier street fight is fucking amazing.
It is good. Yeah.
The fast pace and the dropping the knife and picking it up and the ding ding. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's great. Yeah. Even without the minigun and the bus and all that cool stuff, just that hand-to-hand fight is so incredible.
It is. Yeah. And I think that's one of the special features that I have seen, just how much they worked on it and all. And it's actually them, right?
Yeah.
It's actually...
I'm sure there's some doubles for, you know, a scene or two here and there where they couldn't, you know, flip around or whatever, but...
Yeah, but that... That knife scene that everybody knows about, I think I'm pretty sure that was them, yeah. And it's just so cool. It's yeah, like you said, just the dropping it and flipping it and, oh man, just so close, right there. Oh man, it looked awesome.
Well, and to skip quite a ways here and get to their next and final fight, which is on the helicarrier. And that, how incredible that is, seeing them both in their suits, especially Cap in his first Avengers suit, which, you know, should jog memories for Bucky, which was great.
Right, yeah.
And there's a line in every Captain America movie, and I don't know if it's any in any of the Avengers movies, but I can do this all day is a thing that he says in each of his movies.
Right.
But in this one, they change it because he's fighting Bucky. He says, "Don't make me do this."
Right.
Like, he says it to Schmidt in the first one, says, "Don't make me do this" in this one, and then he says it to Iron Man in Civil War before he whoops his ass.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, I never pointed that. I figured that out.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. I like that, sir.
It took me a bit to be like, well, he doesn't really say it in Winter Soldier, and then I went, oh, what he says is, "Don't make me do this."
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want to do this all day. He's not gearing up and like, yeah, I'm going to keep going until you're down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like he does with Schmidt and Iron Man. It's, "You're my friend. Don't make me do this."
Right. Because I can do this all day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, don't make me do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point. I just kind of took it as like a, like I can and will defeat you. Like, don't make me, like, I don't want to have it to come to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's technically it's the same difference, but
yeah,
it is,
that's true,
technically a play on his, "I can do this all day."
I like that.
Yeah.
Nice. Look at you bringing that here.
That's what I'm here for. And the last thing, which is one of my favorite parts of the movie, when after they fought, the helicarriers go down and all that shit, the beautiful shot of Bucky pulling Cap out of the water.
Mm.
And he, you know, lays him down. And you see Cap laying on the shore there. Yeah. Bucky walking off in the distance. And in the far distance, you see the smoking crater where the... I can't remember what the shield place is called. The Triskelion, I think.
Sounds right. Sounds something like a word I've heard.
Yeah. Like, it's such a wonderful shot.
Yeah.
Like, as a film fan, it's like, oh, that's just, it's pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want that picture on my wall.
That'd be a cool picture. Yeah. Cool poster. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. So I skipped over a lot of stuff. We're about to get into stingers. Did I brush over anything you wanted to bring up?
I don't think so. Let's see. Well, I guess kind of one thing. I did have one thing noted here. It's not important to the movie at all, but the tombstone for Nick Fury. Yes.
Mm.
The line on there, the quote, is the quote that he would say in Pulp Fiction before he'd kill someone. So I don't know if anyone, I don't know if that's in your Easter eggs. It could be. I'm taking that as
I thought
if
it was, but it's not.
Oh, okay. Perfect. I'm glad I'm bringing it up. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's the first one. It's right there.
Oh. Okay.
Ezekiel 25:17.
Yes. Is it in your fun facts? It's not your first
one. It's in my Easter. Oh, it's, no, it's my Easter eggs because it's an Easter egg.
Oh, God, I hate you. We're on this again, aren't we? All right. Well, then we'll leave that for then. We'll go All into right. more detail about that. All right.
Okay.
Stingers.
So, stingers. Best one, obviously, Strucker and the reveal of the twins. I was a little disappointed, and this is more of Age of Ultron, that Strucker was dispatched so quickly. Because he's kind of a cool Cap villain that I would have liked to have seen more of.
All right.
But I'll get over it.
Is there any way they could come back later? No, because Cap's gone, so never mind. I was going to say, is there any way we can kind of find a way to bring him back? Because they're good at doing that. But I guess we'd have to ask.
Because Ultron kills him 7 ways to Sunday in that cell or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. But seeing the twins was great.
It was cool.
That was one of those. I don't remember if I knew it was coming or not. Because a lot of times, stingers and things would get spoiled for me before the movie, and I'd get pissed. But I'm not sure if this one did or not.
Let's hope not.
Let's hope not. It's still great, though. I mean, it's one of those things, because technically they're X-Men. And sure, like, we knew they'd be in Age of Ultron, because of, you know, promo shit and whatever. Yeah. But it's still nice to be like, oh, this is one of those shared universe characters, because they were Avengers, that they could bring them in.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool.
And then the less exciting but still important one is Bucky going to the Smithsonian and reading about himself.
Yeah.
Which is referenced in Civil War.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Does he just say, I read about myself, or what?
Yeah, something like, I read about you in a museum or something.
Oh, yeah, okay. That. Yeah. I totally forgot about this one. So we were watching it. I was watching with my wife, and she was like, is there another thing? I'm like, I actually don't remember, because I don't remember what it is, if there is one. And as soon as it started off, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And that's what's tough. It's like, it's one that I almost tend to skip, because it's not very eventful, but it's also incredibly important at the same time.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I don't know if it's important to see. It's important that he did it, I think.
Yeah.
But
because he's learning about himself, and it's clicking like, oh, I'm not just this mindless assassin. I was Bucky.
Yeah.
Like, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
All right, some fun facts and Easter eggs before we get the frack out of here.
Cool. You want to go back and forth?
You want to start off?
Yeah.
Because I need a break from talking.
All right, here's your break. Fun fact number one, the reveal of Armanzola that had to be extensively rewritten to convey how, quote, this grounded espionage paranoid thriller suddenly screeches to a halt and you switch gears really quickly with this ghost in the machine, unquote, that introduces more science fiction elements. I don't know if it's screeching to a sudden halt, switching gears really quickly, but it is a cool scene.
It's one of those things that I feel like it could have gone off the rails very quickly. Like, true. In a lesser movie or an old school, like, 90s comic book movie, it would have been super campy.
Yeah, if they would have explained it incorrectly. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, they just stuck my heart in that jar over there and my brain in that one, and that's how I'm still alive.
It's like, talking about Amazing Spider-Man 2?
Yeah, sure. I'll take it.
Or Norman Osborn's head is in a jar for some reason at the end.
So I can turn to a computer later.
Chris McKenna, who worked with the Russo brothers on the sitcom Community, contributed to the script by writing jokes for the film.
All right. There were a few, and I laughed.
Yeah.
So good for him. Joss Whedon, director of The Avengers and Avengers Age of Ultron, wrote and directed the mid-credits scene, which features Wanda Maximoff, Pietro Maximoff, and Baron Wolfgang von Strucker. Cool. Which is kind of a thing they do, because I think the same thing happened with the stinger for Thor the Dark World, right?
The Guardians one?
Maybe it was... Is it the Guardians one?
Yeah, James Gunn did that.
James Gunn does it? Okay.
Didn't
it happen in another thing before Guardians? Where the director of the following movie does something with the stinger?
I think Joss might have worked with the first Thor.
Maybe that's what it is.
The first Captain America one.
I think that's what it is, yeah.
Probably, yeah. That'd be my guess.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Yeah, because it was going literally straight into Avengers.
Yeah.
Lola Visual Effects, who worked on the pre-serum Steve Rogers scenes in the film and Captain America First Avenger, also worked on shots featuring an elderly Peggy Carter. This involved digitally transposing the facial features of an elderly actress onto the face of Hayley Atwell, who had performed her lines with no makeup and only a few tracking markers. That's nuts.
It is. Like, I even...
That's not an old lady makeup, that's all digital?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Because I was watching it again, and I was like, is that even her? Or is it just, like, an old lady that looks like her? Man, well done. It's insane.
And I think they did that. Something similar with old Steve in Endgame.
Okay.
Because I... Like, there is an old Steve actor that was there, and I think they did a similar thing.
Nice. Now, for the one of the flashbacks where there looks like they're showing up at Steve's place, and obviously he's small and all that, was that leftover footage or was that reshot with the same
VFX? This makes it seem like it was new footage.
Okay.
Because it says, you know, the pre-serum Steve Rogers scenes in this film, so.
Okay, it does seem this one, that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You're right. Pay attention better.
I know.
I am. No, I meant for myself. Okay. Many of the shots of Washington, D.C. were digitally created due to numerous flight restrictions in the city, which necessitated that locations be recreated by computer.
Because you can't fly a lot of planes around Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
There's some important stuff around there.
Yeah, the Avengers Towers, or not Tower, but whatever that place was called. Triskelion?
Triskelion?
It's Triskelion? Yes.
SHIELD headquarters?
Yeah, you gotta watch out for that place.
Well, not anymore, it's gone. I was gonna say, got helicarriered right in the face.
I was gonna say, only helicarriers can fly around there.
Mm-hmm. last fun fact. 350 different versions of the film were made to accommodate for the different formats it would be released in domestically, while also accounting for international localization and formats. The versions had to be completed in 17 days versus a normal turnaround time of 3 to 4 weeks for contemporary films to make its theatrical release date. One of the various changes for localization was the contents of Captain America's notebook list seen at the beginning of the film, which we'll talk about here in a little bit.
We will.
The first 5 items were different depending on where the film was released, while the final 5 items were the same across all prints. Marvel held online polls allowing fans to select the items featured in each country's release.
Very cool. And yes, Justin is right. We will talk about that a little bit later.
Very shortly.
Yes, after.
Because there aren't very many Easter eggs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the first one is, which we've kind of mentioned already, the inclusion of...
The thing you wanted to say earlier.
Yeah, I was very excited by it. The inclusion of the passage Ezekiel 25:17 on Fury's tombstone references the character Jules Winfield from the 1994 film Pulp Fiction, also played by Samuel L. Jackson.
Very nice.
It is his. It's his kind of his line that he would say... Mm-hmm. Before he kills someone, and he kind of talks about it in that movie where it's like, it's just kind of a messed up line that I just picked up and thought it sounded cool. And I think he kind of looks back on it and is like, it's a little messed up actually, but it's very iconic, and so it's cool that they included that.
Yeah. I'm going to skip this next one since we already did it. During the targeting sequence for Project Insight, one of the crosshairs points to the redesigned Stark Tower in the heart of Manhattan, still sporting the A from the end of the Avengers.
Oh, cool. Didn't notice that. The writer responsible for bringing Bucky Barnes back to life as the Winter Soldier in the comics, Ed Brubaker, makes a cameo as one of the scientists attending to the brainwashed assassin. I feel like we heard that already.
Yeah, I think I said that already too. But this is the last one. Oh, we did this one too. So, all right.
No, say it anyways. People know.
All right, I'll say it anyways. The Triskelion guard Cap holds up is Danny Pudi. The director's helmed several episodes of Community, which stars Pudi as Abed in the morning.
Leaving out Troy like that?
Well, Troy wasn't.
Troy is also in this Homecoming. World. Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. He's in the same world.
He's the Prowler.
Yeah. This is many years after Community. They kind of parted ways.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it could work, depending how far in the future from Community it is. You know, he could lose his accent and join S.H.I.E.L.D. and Donald Glover. Troy was just shopping and changed the way he talks too, I guess. Sure, yeah. We'll go with that. All right, but as Justin mentioned earlier, we are going to talk a little bit more about what was on Cap's list next episode. Sorry, you're going to have to wait. So yeah, we decided that the next episode is going to kind of be what other lists were there. We watched the American version. I was going to say obviously. I don't know how obvious it is, but we did. We're going to kind of look at some others and see what was on their list. We are also going to pick two or three things that we would include on that list.
Yeah.
And we're actually hoping that you could also reach out to us and give us one, two, three ideas of what you would include on that list for Cap. So if you can, just send it out to us. We're all on social media. We are Marvel Pod. We have our website. We are marvelpod.com. You can email us. We are marvelpod at gmail.com. I almost said .com at gmail.com. Maybe we'll have to make that one too.
Yeah,
you can reach us at all those places. So that'd be awesome if you guys could write in and let us know, what would you include on Cap's list? Like, what is something that he's missed over the last 70 years? We'll just go 70, whatever.
Yeah.
If you go a little over, it's fine.
Yeah. Keep it around the before 2012, 2015 range.
Yeah.
I guess.
I like it. Yeah, so we're going to do that next episode. I think it should be fun. Kind of see what's on each other's lists. And I'm interested to see what other countries had on there. I think I've looked up a couple or seen it online. But hopefully I can find a bigger list and we can kind of point out what those things are.
Yeah.
Should be fun.
Yeah. Well, until then, thank you very much for listening. We were happy to do it. And we already did all the contact info. So until next time, I have been Justin.
I have been Jeremy.
And we will see you next time.
Thanks for listening, guys. Bye.
Bye.